Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah, welcome to the show. This is your host, Jerry Williams. We're going to talk about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, where they went through the process of the last debate. A lot of people were happy. A lot of people were unhappy because a lot of people wanted to hear more about how their plans would be. Me personally, you know, I've actually supported both of these candidates. I've been in the middle with both of them up to a certain point here. But I got to tell you that, you know, I'm leaning more towards Hillary Clinton for a reasonings that I believe that she would make a better candidate. The reason why I'm saying that is because she has the experience. You know, she's first lady, former first lady. She's been in the White House. She knows how the White House operates. She knows how foreign policy operates. You know, she knows and has that experience. She was a senator for New York twice. That means she was elected twice by New York. So she's really popular in New York. And what I truly believe when we see the election come up here in New York, I think that she's going to win by a very wide margin in New York. And the reason why I say that is because she's really, you know, kept her ground. I mean, yes, Bernie Sanders has gained some ground in New York, but it's not enough for him to continue to think that, you know, he's going to make it to that magic number. The superdelegates are what's important here to remember. And all the superdelegates are really towards Hillary Clinton. So I really truly believe that Hillary Clinton is going to be the next, you know, elected primary for the Democratic Party. Now, if we look at the polling for Sunday, I'll even go through the Republican side too. So the Republicans, I know there's a lot of Republicans probably who would like to know as well. But if you look at the New York primary for the Republican side, through the Gallup poll and CNN, CNN, CBS, and all that, we're looking at Trump 54, Kasich 19, and Cruz 21. That means Trump is up 33 points, excuse me. So pretty big lead right there, if you look at it. So if we look at the New York Democratic presidential primary altogether, how is the primary going? This means not by state, but overall throughout the United States, the Democratic primary itself, 53 is Clinton and 43 is Sanders. So that's a 10-point margin. That's a very still significant large margin. Some people will say, no, that's not big, but it is a large margin to be in. Now, if we look at the New York, you know, the New York primary, actually, we're looking at around 53 to 43 is even in New York what we have. And then in Pennsylvania, the Republican primary, Trump is at 46, Cruz is at 26, and Kasich at 23. So Donald Trump leads 20 points there in the polls. California Republican primary, we're looking at Trump 49, Cruz 31, and Kasich at 16. So Trump is at 18. Now, California Democratic presidential primary, we're looking at right now Clinton at 52 and Sanders at 40. So she leads, Hillary Clinton leads 12 points, even in California. So there's a lot of these states where she's leading very high numbers. And if you looked at the numbers over on the west side, west coast, or even, you know, middle, the west side of the United States, we can really see that even in like Wyoming and all that, you know, we even seen that the numbers were really high for Bernie Sanders. So the polling is really close. you know, to where they, you know, they were neck to neck in these states, but Bernie Sanders was a little bit higher in those polls. So we actually seen a high significant amount on that, to where they were neck to neck, but yet that's how it played out. So I believe that we're going to see a very high true number of voters voting for Hillary Clinton. I mean, she was the senator, voted twice in the state of New York. A lot of people really like her. They like her politics. They like, you know, what she can do for the country because of what she's done for New York, raising the wages, which she has really fought for. She's fought for the American, the Americans and every person in the United States, but she's also fought for, no, that, but she's fought for New Yorkers. And then with New Yorkers, we're looking at, job, more jobs. And of course, not only that, but gun control. I mean, that's a very important issue. Drugs, crime in New York, having fair rights towards not only, towards whites, but basically towards minority, basically. So, that's what's really important, that, she's fighting for this bill, these bills to be, to where there's no, guns that will, automatic weapons, assault weapons and stuff like that. To where if you look at Sanders, he actually is being ridiculed by like Sandy Hook, and all these other people because he did support and then bounced back from the NRA, saying he supported it, didn't support it, supports this, supports that, don't support it, and people are really realizing that. Another thing that hurts Sanders, I believe that this does hurt him, but, he really, truly was very, getting out there and talking about, well, let's look at what's going to happen, with not only the gun control, but let's look what's going to happen, with what we can do with, not allowing these guns in there. He said, well, it came from Vermont because Hillary Clinton ran an ad, a TV ad about Vermont, but yet it does basically come from other states is what she was saying, not just Vermont, basically. So there's many, things where it bounces back and forth here where it's kind of odd, but truthfully, when you look at the end of this, I mean, we got some problems with Bernie Sanders' campaign here. On the campaign side, the attacks, going against Hillary Clinton, then, of course, you got some other issues of saying that she's not, qualified to be the president, that she has no qualifications. Well, she's well qualified. I mean, it's obviously that's the truth. Now, the big thing is, people are really flaunting to this because they're all excited because they're like, hey, will she release her speech? And a lot of people, they took a poll on this. And did you know that, that majority of the polling that was taken, that people didn't care about the speech? What they cared about was the policies and what's these candidates going to do for the country. They don't care about all this other junk. They want to know what you're going to do for this country. How are you going to turn this country around? So they're not really this throw the tar and mudslinging and crap doesn't really work out too good. Also, another thing that kind of bothers me seeing this, I pay attention to this a lot, and of course a lot of people do as well. But if you look at it, Bernie Sanders, what really hurt him was when he went and did his interview in New York. He didn't really do a great interview because his interview, he didn't really know what to really say. I think he kind of bounced around, fumbled around, didn't really answer the questions. He went a different route. So he made it look like, and he made it to even to himself, as he even acknowledged his plan, is not really 100%. He don't have it down on paper, basically. So he's going with the Donald Trump method of, we're going to tell you what you're going to hear, and we want you to hear what you want to hear, and then once we get elected, or try to get elected, then, we're going to see if we get this pushed. But if you have a Republican Congress, there is really doubt that you're going to get this pushed. You got to have somebody in there who's going to want to fight that and want to fight the Republican Congress. You know, when you talk about giving out free, free, free to everybody, folks, free, free, free is not going to happen. I'm sorry, but our country is not in that area to where you can just give it out free. Now, a lot of people think that, you know, they say, well, he's going to get that from Wall Street. Well, folks, New York, and this is where the election is, New York, coming up. And that is Wall Street. That's home of Wall Street right there. So when you talk about home of Wall Street right there, you know, putting people, splitting up banks, splitting up jobs, maybe even causing the stock market to crash, could even happen. You're putting us into a Great Depression, which could cause us a serious situation. But also, you know, who's going to pay for this? Who's going to pay for this price? It's not going to be you that's out there, that's the high majority, but the middle class, the lower class. And by the way, people never think about that terminology anymore, lower class. So there's really not really a lower class. And in socialism, that's what they want. They want to make everybody one classification. And that's what it's about, is making everybody one class. Now, unfortunately, in the real world, you know, a lot of people do not like that. And that's why I'm saying, I don't care what anybody says, people who are behind the scenes are not going to allow that to happen. Unfortunately, that's the way it works. And you can try to beat it up all you want, but until you remove that, which you're not going to, because it's been in politics for years and years and years, you're not just going to wake up one day and say, we're going to get rid of that tomorrow. It's not going to happen. It's going to take a period of time for that to happen. Now, you know, he's talking about within his first 100 days, all this stuff's going to happen. So it kind of bothers me that he has a dream, but it's called the impossible dream. So I'm a little weary about that. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the statistics. I'm looking at that, you know, in New York, I mean, Hillary Clinton is way up there. I mean, in the polls. People love her. They love the Clintons. They like Bill Clinton for what he did as the President of the United States. You know, I mean, there's I remember, and I'm going to just tell you up front, I remember when I campaigned, one of my first campaigns that I did and I worked on was the Bill Clinton campaign. And I remember that, you know, it was my first one coming out of high school. And, you know, I started working with politics and working in the campaigns. And when I worked with Bill Clinton and his campaign, I got to tell you, I mean, it was a really strong campaign. Campaigning is not fun for either party, I can tell you right now. It does wear you down, and it does wear you down to the point to where you're, you know, you go through a lot of physical hours of work. So, I mean, first and foremost, I applaud everybody who's running and doing their best that they can. You know, if let's say Sanders didn't win the primary, you know, are we going to get upset and say, well, the heck with Hillary Clinton? Well, hopefully a lot of people would hold their heads up and say, we need to move on. You know, we don't want Donald Trump in there. We don't want a Republican in there. You know what I mean? To destroy everything that even President Barack Obama has built and has built with healthcare systems. Now, the healthcare system yet can be tweaked because the Republicans have decided to put their hands in that healthcare system as well because they want things their way. And people blame it on Barack Obama when it's actually the Republicans who are the ones who tweaked everything. So, you know, it's, again, you go back to where there should have been a better healthcare system in play. I mean, the healthcare system is great, what we have. I mean, it's not 100%, but yeah, it's there. But the Republicans have tweaked it themselves to cause the healthcare system to what we have today because they didn't want to listen. They wanted to fight and argue. The Republican Party, to me, looking at what Donald Trump is on that side, is really destroying the Republican Party. So while they're falling apart in destruction, us Democrats in the Democratic Party over here needs to stay together. We need to stick together and stay strong, regardless of who's going to be the primary in, you know, coming up. If it's Bernie Sanders, then I'm going to run with Bernie Sanders and hopefully, you know, good luck to him and everything else. But I truly 100% doubt that Bernie Sanders would be the primary candidate choice. I know Bernie Sanders fans out there. I know, I'm sorry, but you got to look at realistic. and looking at the numbers, it just, I mean, you would have to see him have 70% or higher in all the states that are coming up. And that's just impossible. You know, it's just, it's really impossible, especially where Hillary Clinton now leads in these states. And by the way, where he
good afternoon. My name is Tish James, and I am the New York City Public Advocate. And I want to thank the brave individuals who are standing here with me today in the face of unimaginable tragedy. They have found the courage and the strength to turn their pain into purpose, sorrow into a mission for justice. I'm here with survivors of gun violence. Erica Miguel's late mother, Dawn Hoxman, was the principal of Sandy Hook Elementary. I'm here with Jillian Soto. His late sister, Vicky Soto, was a teacher at Sandy Hook. And I'm here with Sandy Phillips, whose daughter, Jessica Gowie, was a victim of the tragedy in Aurora. President Obama has declared our government's failure to address gun violence as perhaps the biggest regret of his presidency. Last summer, the president remarked that guns are one area where he feels most frustrated and stymied because it's just inconceivable that we remain the last advanced nation on earth without sensible gun laws. The president, despite his best efforts, is right to regret this. But this is a regret that we all share as a nation. It's the regret you see in the eyes of a mother whose son can never come home again. It's the regret of a brother whose young sister is never going to walk again because of the gunshot that took her young legs away. It is the regret of the wife whose police officer husband left for work just like any other day, only to be killed while patrolling the neighborhood he was trying to protect. It's the regret that the young woman in Brooklyn, day before yesterday, was shot in the eye because she was looking out of window. And it's the regret that I have seen hundreds of times in the faces of families when I've had the misfortune of attending funerals for constituents all throughout the city of New York killed by gun violence. But I refuse to be paralyzed by regret. Regret is never as powerful as action. It's only by taking action that we can finally address the plague of gun violence that permeates our society. Action means background checks on all gun purchases, period. Action means federal laws that apply from coast to coast, so states with soft gun laws don't jeopardize that have done the right thing on guns. Action means requiring safe storage of guns so toddlers don't become the fatal victims of accidental shootings. Action means closing loopholes big enough for gun sellers to drive the trucks of death and destruction through. Action means taking on the financial support that helps sustain the gun industry. And yes, Bernie Sanders, action means being able to sue gun makers and gun dealers when their deadly products do what they do over and over again with numbing regularity. Kill people. So let's talk about Bernie Sanders and his role in protecting the gun industry. Senator Sanders voted twice to protect gun dealers and sellers from being held accountable when their irresponsible actions led to heinous crimes. The law was called FLACA. There's a reason the NRA touted the 2005 FLACA bill as their greatest legislative victory in 20 years when it was signed into law. It granted sweeping legal immunity for gun dealers and manufacturers, the kind of immunity that nearly no other industry enjoys, basically turning product liability on its head. And then It was not just about PLACA. Senator Sanders voted against the Brady Bill. Not once, not twice, not three times, or four times, but five times. Senator Sanders voted against the Brady Bill. He voted for an amendment to create the so-called Charleston loophole, which allowed the Charleston shooter to get a gun before his background check was completed. He voted against funding for the CDC to research gun violence. He voted to allow guns and check bags on Amtrak trains. And he defended PLACA protections for gun manufacturers on one of the saddest days in American history, on the day of the Newtown Massacre. Is Bernie right for protecting gun dealers and sellers' lawsuits? I say hell no. Bernie right for voting against the Brady Bill? No. Is Bernie Sanders right for voting for Charleston loophole? No. Is Bernie Sanders right for New York? No. And will Bernie Sanders ever be president of these United States, representing the vast majority of Americans who want responsible gun laws? And I say no. In New York, we often talk about the tale of two cities. And on guns, we have the tale of two candidates. When Bernie stands with the gun industry, Hillary stands with families and communities. As senator from New York, Hillary co-sponsored and voted for legislation to close the gun show loophole. She voted against providing gun dealers and manufacturers with dangerous liability protection. No wonder the NRA has made Hillary a top priority. And it's for that reason she is the candidate that I am supporting. If you want to end the regret all of us feel about the carnage that gun violence has exacted on our country, we cannot afford to hire Bernie Sanders as our next president. We don't need a president who shills for the gun industry, an industry of death, despair, and destruction. I urge my fellow New Yorkers to join us in this fight and elect a president we can trust on the gun industry. Someone who will stand up and fight back against the NRA and join the majority of Americans who believe that the time for sensible gun laws, the time for action, is now. Let's organize and let's vote for Hillary Clinton. I now want to call to the podium our next speaker, and that is Ms. Erica Schmigelsky. Thank you.
It's S-M-E-H-I-E-L-S-K-I.
And T-R-I-P-S.
Yes. Senator Sanders, let me introduce myself. My name is Erica Lafferty Schmigelsky, and I am the one that asked you to apologize, not Hillary Clinton. It is so shameful that you ignored my call for an apology. When pushed by a reporter, instead of responding to me, you attacked Hillary Clinton. I've said before that I'm a single-issue voter. This is my issue, and it is a winning issue. Secretary Clinton is proactively addressing our country's gun violence problem and placing it at the top of her agenda. She is with us. The families behind me, who have also been destroyed by gun violence, stand with me in my call for you to apologize for the devastating impact that your vote had on our families. And yes, Hillary Clinton stands with us. Recently, Bernie Sanders doubled down on his support of giving sweeping legal protection to irresponsible gun makers and sellers. And by doing so, he showed that he is more interested in protecting the gun lobby and carrying water for the NRA than he is standing up to families like mine who have suffered such tragic loss. Senator Sanders said this morning, and I quote, "If you sell me a gun and it explodes in my hand, of course you're liable to be sued. If the product, meaning the gun, works the way it was designed to work, then I do not believe that the gun owner should be sued." Well, Senator Sanders, Adam Lanza's AR-15 worked exactly the way it was designed when it murdered my mother. I have been asked time and time again why I'm politicizing my mother's death. My response? Why would you not politicize something that kills 30,000 plus Americans every single year? Gun violence is a uniquely American problem. It affects all of us, regardless of party affiliation. My mother taught me at a very young age to fight for what I believe in. I believe that there are common sense solutions to end the epidemic of gun violence that plagues our country. I believe that we can do this. I believe in Hillary Clinton. It is completely phony that Sanders didn't have the decency to respond to us when asked for an apology. Instead, he used us as political tools in order to attack Hillary Clinton. I urge Senator Sanders to respond to the families of gun violence about his record of support for gun makers and to make an apology.
And now, Jillian Soto.
Good afternoon. My name is Jillian Soto. My sister, Victoria Soto, was one of the 26 people murdered in Sandy Hook school shooting in December 2012. Today, I want to join Erica's call for an apology from Senator Sanders. Acknowledging the personal impact of his vote to protect gun makers, we deserve an apology from Senator Sanders because while we want and deserve our day in court, Senator Sanders voted to give gun manufacturers special immunity, a vote the NRA said was the most important vote in 20 years. My family is one of the 10 Sandy Hook families involved in the lawsuit against the gun manufacturers. I have been asked by the opposition, telling me that I am being used by the Hillary campaign to further her political agenda. Well, the reality is I'm doing this because I believe in the same thing. Hillary and I share the same values in regards to gun violence and the common sense solution to address this issue. Remington made a calculating decision years ago to market a military killing machine to the general public in order to maximize its own profit. Unfortunately, that drive for profit has blinded both Remington and weapon distributors to sell to the obvious risk and reality that young American men like Adam Lanza constantly choose the AR-15 to carry out mass murders. Remington and others designed and executed an immoral marketing campaign that specifically targets violence-prone, military-obsessed young men, and the result is both predictable and deadly. Our families want the marketers, distributors, and sellers of the AR-15 held accountable for what happened at Sandy Hook. We want these profit-hungry companies to pay for their reckless marketing decisions to stop targeting violent-prone young men as their ideal consumers. We, the litigation, ask only that PLACA, specifically the negligent entrustment exemption to it, be upheld by the court. Whether the law itself should be rewritten or repealed is for others to decide. This is about justice for my sisters and others murdered by this military-style weapon. Every mass shooting in America comes with a cost. The victims pay the ultimate price. Their families, communities, the first responders never fully recover from the carnage. But the makers, distributors, and sellers of these killing machines don't pay a price. In fact, they profit. After many mass shootings, sales of assault rifles skyrocket. Because of Bernie Sanders and others who voted like him, I and other Sandy Hook families are waiting for justice. I believe Remington acted irresponsibly and should be held accountable. I deserve for a jury to determine, not the politicians in Washington like Bernie Sanders. I join Erica and Sandy Phillips to urge Bernie Sanders to apologize for his personal impact his vote has had on my family.
And the last speaker is Sandy Phillips.
Good afternoon. I'm Sandy Phillips, P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S. Sandy was alive. My daughter's name was Jessie, with an I, not an ID, Gowie, G-H-A-W-I. My daughter Jessie was 24 years old when she simply went to a movie. And she, along with 11 other people, lost their lives to an AR-15 carrying 223s made by the military, designed to do the most harm to the human body. These were steel-jacketed, green-tipped 223s that tore through bodies, tore through seats, tore through walls. Wounded 70, many of them so horribly that they'll never walk or have the same brain capacity that they once had. Jessie was shot 6 times with these bullets, once in the leg, going through her thigh and entering the neck, causing massive tissue damage and muscle damage. She was then shot 3 times in the abdomen, one time breaking her clavicle, and one time in the head. That wound caused a 5-inch hole in my daughter's face, blowing her brain out onto the theater floor, onto the seat, and onto the young man that was accompanying her to the theater. I tell you this not to offend you, but to let you know that this person was able to go online and order his ammo with a click of a mouse, with a simple click of a mouse, with no background check and no need to show a driver's license. He had ill intent. How many others out there today have the same intent or worse, and yet we allow it to happen? We sued in court and were denied our day in court because of PLACA. And Bernie sits back and says, oh well, that's the way things go. What he doesn't understand is the devastation that those words cause us, those of us who have lost all. It's insensitive, it's arrogant, and it's certainly not something that I would expect from a president of the United States. Bernie promised to meet with us face to face. We did have a telephone conversation. He was 15 minutes late to that telephone conversation. And the first thing he had the nerve to say to my husband and myself was, I'm very busy. Well, Senator Sanders, we had been busy too. We had been busy burying our daughter and mourning her and fighting for better gun laws in this country. Where were you? Senator Sanders owes all three of us and every American in this country who has lost a child or a loved one to gun violence an apology, and I expect it to happen. I also expect him to follow through with his promise to meet with us. We will be in D.C. and in New York for the next 2 weeks. I'm sure, as busy as he is, he can find a moment to meet with grieving parents. Thanks to Bernie Sanders, the gun and ammo companies of this country can't be held accountable for their negligence that impacts thousands of people every year. But Bernie, we will still hold you accountable for your decisions and for your negligence. New Yorkers will hold you accountable on your negligence on April 9th. Thank you. And on behalf of the families and urban centers all across this nation, they too demand action, and they too demand an apology from Senator Sanders. And they too believe that we really need a change in laws, we need responsible gun laws in this country. And I stand with this family in urging all New Yorkers to go to the polls and elect Hillary Clinton as the next president, someone who will stand up to the NRA. Are there any questions?
the other folks who joined us today. We're not sure what their connection is.
I've just asked them if they wanted to speak, and unfortunately, I will ask them again, but I don't believe that they're in a position to speak, but give me a moment.
I stand here because I have no closure. I heartbreak every day for my son. But I stand here to support my sisters. They're my family. Mr. Bernie, I will not vote for you. I stand here saying this. You will never get my vote. My son didn't even get an opportunity to grow up. I stand with Hillary Clinton.
Any other questions?
Can you give us the circumstances under, can you explain the circumstances under which you are? And where are you from now? Sorry, I know it's hard. Explain where your son was killed.
Akil Christopher was shot on June 27, 2012, while walking home from a high school party in Brooklyn. Survived for 14 days and then died on his birthday, July 10, 2012. I want people to see the pain that I live with every single day. I stand here fighting for my son and so that my other children will have an opportunity to grow up. They deserve to grow up in a country where it's safe. My 9-year-old son should never, ever have to ask me, Mommy, is it okay to go to the park this summer? Will I have to play duck and cover?
Red into a sea of blue.
She's already said she will repeal that.
And so, as a result of her election as the next president of these United States, as we elect more responsible Congress members and senators all across this nation who will follow the lead of the people, because the vast majority of Americans want responsible gun laws, then we will see action in this country, and then we will no longer have to hold and hug and cry before open caskets. Have a sisterhood, but the sisterhood should not be expanded any further. Any other questions?
It was reported late last month that an NRA lobbyist hosted a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. Would you encourage Hillary Clinton to return that money that she received from that fundraiser hosted by lobbyist Jeff Forbes? And there was another donation by an active NRA lobbyist as reported by the Hub.
I don't know the circumstances. We'll look into that and we'll get back to you. Any other questions?
Two more questions.
We thank you all for coming.
All right, so that was the Sandy Hook and some other people had stepped forward, family members who had lost their families to gun violence. That, as a matter of fact, that Bernie Sanders had supported the gun violence, well, not the gun violence, but the NRA, and of course passing some of these guns. So when with this being passed, of course, you know, the families came forward and said, you know, of course the company's not being held liable or accountable for it. And Sanders, of course, said, no, I'm not going to apologize for that. So, I mean, he even said it during the debate, which was really kind of interesting that he would say that. But, you know, the people are very upset. And with that said, you know, you have, you know, is somebody who's going to protect us from gun violence. You know, this guy, you know, Senator Sanders is definitely not the one who chose for that, apparently. You know, he didn't choose for supporting that. Of course, he says he did, but when you go back and look at, he voted down the Brady bill, you know, over five times, you know, five plus times, which would allow a background check, which, you know, a lot of people are very upset that that happened. But let's look at something else now. Let's just turn the tables for a minute and look at Bernie Sanders' plan, because that's the important part for people to understand. How Bernie Sanders' plan is it going to work, or is it going to cost us money? Apparently, according to many different economic advisors who have put this together and looked at his plan, they say, and they state, it would cost our country $22 to $24 trillion more in debt of deficit. Now, that's really interesting that you think about that, because who's going to pay for that? Because when you hear the word free, I'm sorry, but, you know, my mom, my dad always taught me that nothing in this world is for free. You have to work for it. You know, you have to, you know, you're going to pay a price for it. So when you know, somebody's going to pay for that. Someone is. So who's going to be the person going to pay for it? Well, we got to look at that. And the middle class is going to be part of that. And, of course, Bernie Sanders acts as if, you know, the middle class or everybody else is going bad as it is. And really, let's take a look at his plan. And listen to him speak it, and of course, let's debunk or look through this plan as thoroughly as we can, because that's the important part. If we can look at this, so let's.
I'm going to be talking about the incredibly important issue of.
And by the way, this is something that he has on his website, but we're going to let you hear a little bit of it, and we're going to break it up from this. We're going to let you know, have a way for you to hear how this is broken down.
Income and wealth inequality, and I very much.
And of course, it's going to show you not only that what he says is actually false and actually debunked.
Would appreciate your help in getting this video out to your friends and to your family. The economic reality for most Americans is pretty clear. For the last 40 years, the American middle class has been disappearing, and more Americans are living in poverty than at almost any point in our nation's history.
The middle class is not disappearing. In fact, all income quintiles saw their real per capita incomes rise over the period from the 1960s until today. And of course, more are in poverty. The population has risen. In fact, it has risen by 50% since 1970. Assuming the poverty rate stayed the same, that means the number in poverty would have risen by that same number, 50%. But even that is wrongheaded. The official poverty rate does not include transfer payments from the government for things like food stamps, housing assistance, and earned income tax credits. This more accurate measure showed above includes those benefits. That puts the poverty rate considerably lower, at around 10%. The poverty measurement used to mean those people had no means to obtain food. Now the measurement means that they simply get food from the government. The official poverty measurement by the government is meaningless.
Today, real median family income is almost $5,000 less than it was in 1999.
Real income per American household rose only 6% over the entire period from 1969 to 1996. But real per capita income rose 51% over that same period. The discrepancy is due to the fact that the average size of families and households was declining during those years, so that smaller households, including some with only one person, were now earning about the same as larger households had earned a generation earlier. Looking at a still longer period from 1967 to 2007, real median household income rose by 30% over that span, but real per capita income rose by 100% over that same span. When two working people in one household today earn the same total amount of money that three working people were earning in one household in the past, that is a 50% increase in income per person, even when household income remains the same.
Today, the typical male worker is making $783 less last year than he did 42 years ago after adjusting for inflation. The typical female worker is making $1,337 less than she did in 2007.
Wages absolutely have decreased, but his data is completely out of context. The measurement of income he uses does not include non-cash benefits like insurance provided by employers. To put that into context, imagine you had to buy insurance yourself. That would cost hundreds of dollars more per month. Employer benefits or subsidies for benefits is income. Yet Sanders refuses to use measurements of income that account for that. In addition, the typical CPI measurement of inflation overstates the rate of inflation. This is common sense. A car is not the same as it was 40 years ago. Car made 40 years ago did not last 200,000 miles, and the quality was inferior. Do you want proof? Look at the fact that far more of the so-called impoverished today have air conditioning, whereas 40 years ago, only 10% of households had air conditioning, regardless of income. Now, around 90% of households have air conditioning.
And today, embarrassingly, the United States of America has by far the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major industrialized country on Earth.
He is correct. Just look at Spain. Our childhood poverty is technically higher than theirs. Unfortunately, their unemployment rate is three times as high for all of the shown age groups. What country sounds like it is doing better economically for the poor? Spain or the United States? You choose.
The very, very rich are getting incredibly richer. The middle class is disappearing, and the poor are getting poorer. That is the tragic reality of our economy today.
People do not live on percentage shares. They live on real income. Among those Americans who were in the bottom 20% in 1975, 98% had higher real incomes in 1991, and two-thirds had higher real incomes in 1991 than the average American had back in 1975 when they were in the bottom 20%. The University of Michigan study found that among working Americans who were in the bottom 20% in 1975, approximately 95% had risen out of that bracket by 1991, including 29% who had reached the top quintile by 1991. The top quintile is the top 20%. Compare that to only 5% who still remained in the bottom quintile. The largest absolute amount of increase in income between 1975 and 1991 was among those people who were initially in the bottom quintile in 1975, and the least absolute increase in income was among those who were initially in the top quintile in 1975. In other words, the incomes of people who are initially at the bottom rose more than the incomes of people who are initially at the top. This is directly opposite of the picture presented by Bernie Sanders, who bases his information on brackets over time instead of following the people who are moving in and out of those brackets. A study of individual incomes over time in Canada turned up patterns very similar to those in the United States. During the period from 1990 to 2009, Canadians who were initially in the bottom 20% had both the highest absolute increase in income and the highest percentage increase in income. Only 13% of the Canadians who were initially in the bottom quintile in 1990 were still there in 2009, while 21% of them had risen all the way to the top quintile. And the IRS found that between 1996 and 2005, the income of individuals who had been in the bottom 20% of income tax filers in 1996 had increased by 91% by 2005, and the income of those individuals who were in the top 1% in 1996 had fallen by 26%. Doesn't sound like the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, does it?
Furthermore, we need to make certain that we have pay equity for women work is absurd, that women continue to make 78 cents on the dollar compared to men.
An interesting fact, a study by the American Association of University Women found that overall the regression analysis of earnings 1 year after graduation suggests that a 5% pay gap between men and women remains after accounting for all variables known to affect earnings. Professor James Bennett found 20 differences between what men and women do in the workplace that influence income that are not found in the raw numbers that Bernie Sanders uses. These reasons include that men go into technology and hard sciences more than women, and these are higher paying jobs. Men tend to take more stressful jobs that are not 9-to-5. Again, these are more higher-paying jobs. Men are more likely to work longer hours, and the pay gap widens for every hour past the 40-hour work week. Women are more likely to have gaps in their careers, primarily because of child-rearing and childcare. Less experience means lower pay. And also just the fact that these women are choosing jobs that they can easily return to after having children. That explains the considerable difference, and that explains why there's only a 5% gap.
And among other things, we need to put a tax on Wall Street speculation so that every American, regardless of income, can go to college tuition free. Now, as many of you know, 7 years ago, the taxpayers of this country, as a result of the greed and recklessness and illegal behavior on Wall Street, our country, our middle class, bailed them out. Well, now it is Wall Street's turn to make sure that they help the middle class of this country and that all of our people, regardless of income, can get to college.
Bernie Sanders knows nothing about federal spending and federal taxation. Consider that Bernie Sanders is being advised by three modern monetary theory economists, Bill Black, James Galbraith, and Stephanie Kelton. The main thing MMT economists teach is that federal spending is not revenue constrained. Taxes do not pay for any federal spending. Taxing Wall Street does nothing to pay for college students. Considering that Sanders is being advised by three prominent MMT economist, you think he might grasp the most important and biggest part of modern monetary theory. Spending increases dollars in circulation. Taxing destroys dollars. It is that simple. And Bernie Sanders, with his three MMT economists advising him, still cannot grasp that simple fact.
Social Security and a mandated $15 minimum wage without spending a single dime? Don't be daft. You know who.
The Bernie Man Cast!
So I received this flyer at the Grand Rapids Feminist Film Festival, and ironically, people who hate social justice warriors were mad at me for not supporting Bernie Sanders.
Off the bat, disregard the fact that his tacky campaign slogan was stolen from a late 80s Jane Fonda workout tape.
Feel the burn, you bitch!
Many of you think that I'm wrong on the financial issues, and that's fair. Even Bernie Sanders himself has said that the attacks on him are unwarranted, despite the fact that he's never really rebutted them.
So I'm going to promise them free health care and free college.
But Bernie, how do you plan to pay for that?
It's never come up!
So anecdotally, this is the promo material that was sent to me. And these are all the free things proposed without any real plan to pay for them other than these two things. Plus a third thing that we'll get into.
Up on the housetop! Clack, clack, clack! Down through the chimney! With more free shit!
Now, is this even close to financially viable? Granted, all mathematical equations available to human beings right now say no. But you don't have to take my word for it.
Take a look. It's in a book. A reading rainbow.
Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty, please allow me a moment to plug our capitalist sponsors in Audible.com. This week, there's a promotion going on at Audible.com/Crowder, where you can get a free audiobook to try. Again, that's Audible.com/Crowder. It's free. Support the show. I recommend Ben Carson's book, read by Mr. High Energy himself.
Benny, we're going to be just fine, because she believed it.
And if you don't download it, you're probably racist. Audible.com/Crowder. Again, it is a great service because, like the podcast that many of you listen to on iTunes or SoundCloud with Audible, you can listen to a book if you don't have time to read it, and it can be going on in the background while you're reading, researching, studying. I use it all the time. Audible.com/Crowder. I really do recommend it, and don't be racist, get Ben Carson's book. Back to Sanders. Financial experts have done the math, and they have figured out that Bernie Sanders' plan would add an additional $18 trillion to our national debt over the next 10 years. I know you'll say it's Wall Street Journal, it's been debunked. I'll get to that as well. Really quickly, here on YouTube, I see some self-professed financial gurus use national deficit and debt interchangeably, but they're different and it's important. Why is that? So the deficit in 2014, meaning the annual spending beyond our revenue, was $500 billion. Our national debt is around $18 trillion. So the deficit is the yearly overspending and the national debt is the cumulative, the sum total. So if we round the numbers for simplicity at $500 billion in annual deficit, in 2 years, that'll put us at $19 trillion, okay? Okay, so in addition to the current spending deficit of hundreds of billions, the Bernie Sanders proposal would add an additional, on top of that spending, $18 trillion in debt over the next 10 years at minimum. So on what does Bernie Sanders plan to spend this money? Well, free college, free health care, expanded social programs.
Here are some free phones! Treat yourself!
Space gray sucks! Is that a 6+?
You want a 6+? Get him your 6+!
No.
Get him your 6+!
Hey!
Get him your 6+!
Like I said, some of this math came from the Wall Street Journal, and Bernie Claus's supporters were quick to condemn it as dishonest, and so were the Occupy Democrats page of the 99%. Yet his supporters and Bernie Sanders himself have yet to offer an official rebuttal or even explanation for the new spending, instead say that we could potentially save money in the theoretical.
But Bernie, someone is bound to ask you how to pay for this.
Trust me, it's never going to enter into the equation.
So the pro-Sanders arguments come back to three main components: stopping the endless military spending, taxing the rich more, and finally, they claim that a nationalized healthcare plan would actually save us money. Now, some of you think that the spending versus revenue math may be more complex than people lead on to be, maybe so. But allow me to start off with an absolute, an extreme to make a point. If you cut the United States military entirely and taxed all earnings over $1 million at 100%, you still couldn't come anywhere close to paying for this plan.
Perhaps I've not made myself clear. The chances of the media or my voting constituency asking how I'll pay for this plan is lower than Ted Cruz having a sex dungeon!
Okay, so let's start with the military. The military-industrial complex. Why is that phrase thrown around so much? Because just like ignorant bumper stickers, it assumes that the United States' biggest expenditure is its military. It's not. Total military spending in this country accounts for 18% of our budget. Not the same as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and certainly a lot less than all of our safety programs and welfare initiatives when combined. Not even close. People love to throw out the number that the United States spends more on its military than anybody. But when you account for percentage of GDP, we're just so successful in America, we actually spend less than Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Israel. Food for thought, in the last 7 years, year over year, increased spending on the military has far outpaced the United States and many countries like Russia, China, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, etc. Granted, I know many of you think that's a good thing and that the United States military might should be seen as an evil instead of a virtue. So let's just move on right now to the numbers. 2014, total military spending was around $610 billion. So let's cut all of that, 100%. gone. Over 10 years, we gain about $6 trillion. Congratulations, you've made the United States and the world a much less safe place, but you're not even close to paying for all of Bernie Sanders' free stuff.
Just tell all those kids that will take that shit from other people's piles of shit so we can give them more free shit!
Which brings us to point dose, multiculturalism. Okay, so let's tax the wealthy. They can afford it. After all, the top 1, maybe 5, 10% didn't earn that through responsible saving, investing, and tireless work, so it's the moral thing to do. To steal their shit. Let's assume so. Still, would it solve the spending problem? Firstly, when we throw around terms like top 1% or 10%, it's important that we define them. What constitutes the top 1% in America? It's actually any household with annual income exceeding $500,000. A great living, to be sure, but hardly the vilified billionaires we've come to believe. But let's start with a number even higher. The top percentage of the top 1%. Would it even cover our costs? Let's say you tax all earnings, every dollar, 100% over $1 million in this country. What would you get? About another $616 billion annually. Add that with the $6 trillion from entirely cutting the military, and you've got another $6 trillion, so you're at $12 trillion. Damn it, still $6 trillion short.
Missed it by that much!
Moving along down on the trail, disregarding the fact that nobody would work for free, the negative ramifications would be insane, particularly the punishment of small business owners, and the fact that essentially a 100% tax is absurd. How else can we generate revenue? Well, you'd probably have to increase that number from the top percent of the top 1% to, let's say, the top 5%. Those bastards can still afford it. So what defines the top 5%? Any households earning $190,000 annually or more. Damn, I thought they'd have more. Well, what if we just take almost everything, or 90% like Bernie Sanders seems okay with everyone in the top 10%. Top 10% in the United States is any household earning $150,000 or more. Not exactly the fat cats you thought, huh? Still, for the greater good, they can afford to have more, if not nearly all of their stuff taken, right? Not exactly. Even those evil 150,000 heirs are still overburdened, paying over 73% of the taxes already, despite only making up 43% of all revenue. Even if that sounds fair to you, Mr. Pantsless YouTuber with a bag of Cheetos, it still doesn't make skyrocketing their taxes any more financially viable.
That's bosses.
It's why Greece, with their 46% income tax, is, well, Greece. It's why their own government has a really tough time collecting taxes. It's why the Laffer curve exists. It's why nearly every single empirical economic study ever conducted and published in peer-reviewed academic journals shows a negative impact between higher taxes and economic growth.
Son of a bitch! I know where you're going with this! Stop!
So again, using the most extreme examples of entirely cutting the military and entirely taxing the wealthy, you still don't come close to covering what we need. When the verifiable, tangible numbers must be thrown out to make your case, that's when leftists direct you to point three. The theoretical proposal that instituting a nationalized healthcare plan could potentially save us money. Now, even the leftists at Salon and Huffington Post are not arguing that the Bernie Sanders national healthcare plan is a net gain, but that it could figuratively save us $5 trillion when compared with the $18 trillion in expanded spending, namely by reducing administrative costs, medical inflation, etc. So we've reached the point where you now just have to take their word for it. The idea is predicated on the notion that we will spend $5 trillion nationally anyway, so it's in our best interest to give the consumer buying power choice and freedom over to the federal government because it could save us money in the long run and potentially increase the quality of healthcare. A few problems here, not the least of which is a gross infringement on the freedoms of the American public who still want to be able to choose their own healthcare. Like I said, it's important to note that we're in the realm of projected costs now. As a general rule, the United States government never comes in anywhere near their projected costs when taking over massive social programs like this. From small programs like student loan forgiveness to larger programs like Medicaid and, yes, Social Security itself. What leftists tout as a victory with Obamacare in costs versus initial projections is really hardly a victory here, because projected costs actually rose until, surprise, the government kept expanding the deadline and every non-Obamacare enrollee saw their premiums skyrocket. Even leftists aren't thrilled with the results and have acknowledged that a mandated subsidization of other people's health care is not really comparable to the projected costs of a nationalized single-payer health care plan. So you have to point to countries like Canada, where I was raised, and you can see a video here on Canadian health care, as a moral victory, when Canadian liberals themselves have acknowledged the need for reform and fixing the $500 pay gap when it comes to their nationalized health care plan.
Said 500, I meant 500 billion.
And I don't want to spend that much time on this point because the fact is everybody is guessing. It's like arguing over whether Superman could beat Batman in a fight or Ronda Rousey versus Floyd Mayweather. It's silly, it's unrealistic, and a whole lot like Bernie Sanders.
How can you be so selfish?
Bernie, no!
He only has a 5-ass!
No!
You son of a bitch!
So in closing, and I'm getting very near the end of this now, to believe in Bernie Sanders' proposal and tax plan, you have to do the following. Disregard that cutting our military entirely wouldn't make a dent. Disregard that taxing the wealthy and even households with $150,000 a year or more, those bastards at an astronomical rate wouldn't cover it, and disregard the fact that said job creators and wealth generators would take their wealth and jobs somewhere else. You must believe that the wealthy will effectively work for free because they want to pay for your stuff. Just that much. Once you ignore all these concrete and tangible examples, simply shout that a nationalized health care plan would save us money and make up for the trillions and trillions of dollars in costs completely unaccounted for.
Get it over! It's for the greater good!
The scariest part? There are still millions of people who actually believe in it, and nothing you or I say can convince them otherwise, because how can you compete with make-believe?
Stop it! Being so selfish!
No!
Bernie, are you okay?
Are you...
All right, so that was actually a podcast they have, but it was really kind of interesting. Anyway, they break down the barriers of Bernie Sanders' plan. Of course, it's make-believe. It really is. I mean, this is a make-believe plan that, you know, I mean, you got to look at this first and foremost. You know, it's nice to go out and say, hey, let's give out free stuff. Let's give free. But, you know, who's going to pay for that free stuff? Somebody's going to pay for it. And to get half the stuff that Bernie Sanders wants passed through Congress is going to be, I mean, it's not going to happen. I mean, it's totally not going to happen. So he's telling people what they want to hear. He will not break it down to what people should be hearing. So when people ask, hey, Bernie, how are you going to do this? You know, he doesn't really have an answer. He goes around the answer, but he will not give the answer of how he's going to break it down. So when you have a politician that does not know how to do it, I mean, even say the word, I don't know, which was in the interview, or I'll get back to you, is not a good answer. It has to be something that is broken down to where we need to be paying attention to it. And also something we need to really be paying attention to is that this plan that he has, you know, that he has, he'll tell you till he's blue in the face that it will work, that it's not a dream, that it's not a rainbow, rainbow dream, that it will happen. But folks, I mean, you got to look at reality. All you got to do is just think for a moment, can this really truly happen? Now, Bernie Sanders, I call them the Bernie nuts out there, the supporters who get crazy over this stuff, will tell you yes, because they are brainwashed into believing this. When I ran in the campaign with Obama, when I did Obama's campaign, this is the campaign that they're kind of trying to run, is that they're like Obama, and it's, you know, he's not Obama in no way, shape, or form. He has not got a good plan. So the problem is there's too many people out there that believe in the tooth fairy, apparently, and that, you know, Bernie Sanders is going to give them something. But it's not going to happen. Unfortunately, you got to look at the real world and look at real world politics. And you have to go through so many different variables of getting things done. and getting it done through the Congress and getting it passed. You know, Bernie doesn't have a good record in this because he's new. He's not new. He's been in Congress, what I'm saying. But he's not newly as far as experienced in having other ties to where people would really trust this guy. So that's the point you have to look at. Looking at the difference between Clinton's record and Bernie Sanders' record, there's a lot of big difference to it. And really, when you break it down, Clinton has a better record when it comes to making sure with gun safety, gun policies, economic growth, and, of course, being Secretary of State and knowing foreign policy, you know, former First Lady. She has a serious background in politics to be nominated the President of the United States and, of course, being the primary. The numbers show you right there that the numbers coming up in these states for delegates is it's crazy, folks. So Bernie Sanders would have to win 70% or more of these delegates in the upcoming states. It's not going to happen. So to get to that magic number he's looking for, it's not going to happen. I mean, and he wants to go to you know, he's talking about contesting it and everything else. And they had somebody on CNN with the DNC that said they will not do any, there is not going to be any, allowing any contesting or anything. It's just, you know, they know who's going to be the president. They're not saying who the primary person's already picked, but they said it'll already be, you know, we'll have a choice here, you know, by the end of April here. So I believe that too. Unfortunately, Bernie Sanders doesn't believe that. He's in a dream world still, unfortunately. And so is his followers. But, you know, they hope and they dream, and that's what it's about. I mean, you know, he thought he was going to win Ohio. I remember when he came to Ohio, he really thought he was going to pick up Ohio. Didn't happen. Ohio went for Hillary Clinton by a very large margin, okay, with over 200 and something thousand more votes going towards Hillary Clinton. I mean, it was almost like 300,000 more towards Hillary Clinton. So, I mean, Florida was a big margin that went towards Hillary Clinton. So this shows you that the South, the East, really, and even California, is really wanting to go towards Hillary Clinton. And that's probably because of her background. She's really done a lot with Women's Lib, working with the, different communities, and of course the gay and lesbian communities. So I believe that she's worked a lot with that too. So she's done a lot with working into trying to get this. Now a lot of people tried to attack her over, you know, with fossil fuels and all this, which she always talks about clean energy, getting a clean energy. You know, we need to be using solar panels, and this is all stuff that is in the plan that she wants to have. We need to create more jobs. But what she's trying to say is you got to have an education. You got to have something in between that education. So where people are used to certain jobs, yeah, we're going to have to go get reeducated to have a better job. Unfortunately, that's what happens. Now, somebody who is 40 years old says, I don't want to go back to school. You can understand that maybe they get into a classroom and get an education. You could have that. You could have, you go back into it, have a be trained in, economic way of doing it, of working in maybe the oil and coal industry and stuff like that. It's not to get rid of it. Basically, it's to try to cut it down to almost elimination. Yes. But you got to make sure that you have some other way to create jobs in that field. You see what I'm saying? So job creation is in that plan. It takes a lot to rebuild this and, of course, put it together. She is really supporting Barack Obama, which I support Barack Obama. I don't think Barack Obama was the worst president we had. I think that he took what George Bush gave him on the desk and had to work with what he had. So I think he did a great job with what he had to do. I think that if we get a Clinton in there, the Clintons will actually refix even more. And, you remember we had George Bush Sr. in there. he really had the economy really going, really messed up. They had taxation on the middle class. And, of course, Bill Clinton came in, cleaned it up, and, you know, straightened it all out, and right down the road they went. Then, of course, Bush Jr. gets in there, and down, you know, here we go. Increased deficit goes up, war increases deficit, everything happens. So everything we see, you know, 9/11, all that stuff happening was really terrible. But, you know, I mean, here we go. We got, you know, an increase in deficit. I think it's going to take the Clintons again to readjust that deficit, bring it down, and actually create more jobs for people. You know, giving out free stuff is is a joke. It's not real. You're not going to get free stuff. I'm sorry. You know, people say, well, I should get free stuff. You owe me. But you need to work for it, right? So there should be something into it. So free stuff, no. It ain't going to happen. Socialism in the socialistic ways is really, in a sense, it's not really 100% good, as it will not, it can actually destroy an economy more than help it. Destroying Wall Street is like saying, let's do a stock market crash. Let's destroy everything on Wall Street. Take the stock market, take everything from the bankers, destroy them. And basically, that's what you would see happen. And going back to some of these bailouts, if it wasn't that some of these bailouts did take place back then, it helped create jobs. It helped the jobs to sustain, like in Michigan. So that's what was really nice about it. So it's really important that some things did work out and some things didn't work out. Some people took the money and ran, right? Okay. Well, those people should be held accountable, and that's why you hear even Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton both say and agree on those who do crime by taking a bailout or whatever, that they will have to go to jail. And I agree with that too. So they're both on the same page on that. It's just, do you believe in the fairy tale land of getting free stuff versus that it's going to take some time to work on stuff? Minimum wage, yes, $15 an hour, awesome, great. But you got to look at what happens when you raise the minimum wage. When minimum wage goes up, pricing goes up. Your housing goes up. Everything goes up with minimum wage. So, I mean, it's great to have it, but everything goes back up. So what Hillary Clinton was trying to explain at the debate was we gotta gradually go into that without causing, you know, people to basically become in a situation again. And that's where Sanders wants to put people back into a higher tax bracket, of course, middle class, and putting people into a situation where they're going to be basically homeless again. You don't want that, okay? And when Bernie doesn't answer the media on how he's doing his plans, people don't like that. And that's what people say here.
That will emerge in the next couple of days, and we were discussing it privately a few moments ago, and that is the transcript of an interview that he did with the New York Daily News that's now getting a lot of circulation. And I am sure one Wolf Blitzer will be using that during the debate as question fodder. In the same way that Donald Trump was harmed for what he said behind closed doors with the Washington Post, and people got a look at that transcript and they said, you know, there's no there there. Similarly, Bernie really didn't have answers to some substantive questions that were put to him that I think are going to be problematic.
And Michael, on that point, yeah. Hillary Clinton has copied and pasted the entirety of that interview in the New York Daily News and is sending it now out in an email as a fundraiser.
I just hope that was me a Christmas card out of it.
You're actually sending out in April.
You know, some of it is surprising because the bulk of the beginning of the interview is about Bernie's central campaign proposal, which is to break up the banks. And yet he stumbled on how to do it. I will say in defense of Bernie Sanders, this is a grueling process. And they all are. They're all tired. I'm not denigrating anybody. So you can have those kind of mistakes. That's why this debate, as Michael points out, will be so important. That's the time he can do that cleanup, because nobody doubts Bernie's a smart guy. And so I suspect some of it might have been.
And let me just pause right there for just a second, because one thing that really killed me here is that when Bernie Sanders talked about he went after Hillary about, you know, talking about the Palestine and of course Israel and going about AIPAC and all that, but you know what, he didn't even attend it at all. So I don't understand why he would go after her over it when he didn't even show up. So, I mean, you know, that's what you got to look at. He didn't even show up for that, and that's a kind of a problem too. You know, so to me, coming into New Yorkers, obviously you know who to vote for. The right person would be Hillary Clinton. She was your senator, and you voted her in twice. You know she did a great job. She, you know, helped to build up New York, and of course she is continuously building up, and she is really highly reputable in her career. She would make and will make a great president of the United States. So that's what we always have to remember, is that Hillary Clinton, my prediction, will be the president of the United States. But I know she's going to win the primary, which is coming up. I think she's going to win New York by a high mass amount of votes. And these next states coming up, she's going to win a high amount of votes, which I truly believe by the end of April, we'll know who the president's the primary presidential candidate will be for the Democratic side. And I believe that will be Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry, but I'm just looking at the facts. You got to look at the facts. You can't look at, you know, hopes and dreams and ice cream cones and make-believe land here. We got to look at the facts and where it lies. Bernie Sanders is on that kind of page, but we got to look at the facts. So, Hillary, I give you this because it's coming up. That's what we'll hear soon for Hillary Clinton as the president of the United States when she takes that. All right, let's go ahead. And you know what's really nice about it is New Yorkers are awesome. So New Yorkers, get out there to vote Tuesday and really educate yourself on both candidates. Don't just vote on somebody because you hear free stuff coming out of their mouth. You need to really pay attention. Remember, Billy Joel is one of my favorite singers. And I'm going to end the show on this. We'll see you tomorrow. And we'll be on at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Politics with the New York Democrats, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders running. And, of course, Democratic primary convention running.
Don't care if it's Chinatown or on a riverside. I don't have a reason. Left them all behind.